whether you want to
buy, buy, buy.
In a bear market or
sell, sell, sell
in a bull market. Jim Cramer can help you become a better investor. Mad Money, weeknights 6 Eastern. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
Primetime on Wildcard Week.
Yeah, it's getting pretty wild.
This is a Wildcard Week edition of Primetime with Isaac and Suk.
Injured? Don't trust just anyone to something so personal. Call George McCoy at Warren Allen. Online at warrenallen.com.
Isaac and Suk on 1080.
Wildcard, bitches!
The Fan.
Well, it is a good night for college hoops. Buckley's is telling you that Florida and Tennessee are clashing tonight. Tennessee, the only undefeated team left in the country.
Down 9-0 early.
Yeah, they're already down 9-0.
I got Pitt and Duke up on the TV right now. Yeah. I don't know if Pitt, I mean, Pitt looks like they got a good record. They're not ranked.
Jeff Capel returning to the Cameron Indoor there.
Yeah.
He's the coach at Pitt. Good little night.
Mm-hmm.
Good little night.
Well, I read an article today on the offensive guru behind Auburn basketball team. You kind of forget that Auburn's...
Who's the guru behind? Is it? It's not Bruce Pearl?
No, it's a...
Analytics guy?
Yeah, it's like an analytics guy and just the kind of a guy that Bruce Pearl kind of that brought in and, you know, a little redemption story. And I forget what the guy's name was, but he just... I always kind of forget that Auburn... when I think of Auburn, I think of football, but Bruce Pearl has it rolling down there.
Yeah, I think they're number two.
Yeah, they right? In the story, they were number one, but the story might have been...
They lost. Tennessee's one, Auburn's two. Iowa State or somebody maybe three.
You're like, I don't know.
Anyway, I will say, and I said this while you were out on vacation over the holiday, college basketball is grabbing me again.
Yeah.
Because a lot of these teams have upperclassmen. Like, mm-hmm. It's better ball because of the transfer portal.
Oh, and it's the same
has thing. Allowed older players. And now, granted, none of these guys have played with each other, so... November and December were pretty rough, but now you get into conference play in January. These guys have played for a couple months together and practiced for a couple months. These teams are kind of gelling, and they look a lot better than they used to because it's all upper class. Many of them are upperclassmen. Unlike Duke isn't.
Yeah.
Duke has a lot of freshmen, and Arkansas does with Calipari. But other than that, most of these teams have a lot of experience.
Well, and what's nice too, and you're seeing this in, because I watched a little bit of Kentucky and Florida had a good one the other day that it was going around on Twitter, and I
Saturday.
Flipped over to it, and that
106-100.
Yeah, and that ended up, I think that was like 5-8 or something, and Kentucky ended up pulling that out, and they were talking about it on the broadcast, and the same thing is true in college football. Early entries into the NBA and college football are down like 25-35%, depending on what sport you look at. Because now some marginal guys that, you know, were borderline first round picks in college basketball and maybe second and third round guys in the NFL, they're sticking around. And because you can make serious money now in the collegiate game. And some guys, like a Drew Timmy, for example, Drew Timmy was worth more in college. Dylan Gabriel is probably worth more. If he could somehow get another year, and he doesn't.
Well, like Evan Stewart's a good example,
Stewart,
I think.
Yes.
I mean, he's probably maybe NFL caliber, but would be a second or third day pick. He can come back to Oregon and get a nice bag.
Yeah, and he said he's coming back.
And I'm guessing that under the old way of doing things, Evan Stewart probably says, hey, I'm a big physical guy. I can show out. I can run. I'll have a good pro day. And I'm gonna take the NFL and see what I can do. Start my clock. Whereas now, you can come back, and I'll bet you for a guy like Evan Stewart at Oregon, that's probably $1 million, maybe a couple hundred, you know, $600,000-$800,000.
Somewhere around there, though. Yeah, at least $500,000, I would think.
You know, and so I do think that this this new world of NIL is going to build better. It's going to build better teams. Now, it's going to neuter a lot of the smaller teams that just become the transfer portal farm system. But as far as
in basketball, there's like 300 of those teams.
Yes.
You know.
Well, in college, you know, and it makes me sad when I look. Montana State just lost the national title. And
Good game. They
have an All-American tackle.
Walk-off punt.
Walk-off punt.
You see that?
All-American. I did see that. We were watching.
That was weird.
But their All-American tackle is in the portal. And they say that he is going to be one of the two or three best tackles in the portal. And then you see like Idaho's tight end is gone. And those are like the small schools, but even the, you know, the lesser schools, the, you know, Iowa States of the world and Oregon State, Washington State, you know, Cal, places like that, you just get ripped apart. That part sucks. But for a school like Oregon or Ohio State or Bama, they'll just keep reloading, and you don't really have to go into a season as one of those big boys with big question marks. You can find proven players at just about any position, and that will make for better high-end teams.
All right, coming up next, are you ready for the college football crack block? I don't think you are.
No one. Crack blocks are illegal now, so.
I know.
So no one's ready.
This is going to be hot.
Sounds dangerous.
It does sound dangerous.
Might be.
Is it Dange Witch? Remember that?
Yeah, the Subway sandwich?
That might be.
Broncos orange, let's ride.
I can't believe Subway's still a thing.
Has there ever been a commercial that aged as poorly as Russell Wilson's Dange Witch? It's spicy.
Well, I don't know if it aged poorly, it just was never good.
No, but Russell Wilson, dangerous?
Mr. Unlimited.
Gosh.
All right, well, we'll get to that coming up next on The Fan.
Side note, ever eaten beaver?
What an idiot.
This is a Wild Card Week edition of Primetime with Isaac and Sue.
Brought to you by George McCoy at warrenallen.com.
On 1080 The Fan.
Yeah, we were talking about transfers. And it's really helping both football and basketball.
Yeah.
And it's to the detriment of the lesser schools, obviously.
It's killer.
But you were making a good point during the break. I'll let you re-disseminate it to the people, but you were talking about donors,
yeah,
and what schools are best in line to benefit most from.
Well, there's a lot of talk that the SEC is like
portal,
you know, joking. SEC is a basketball conference.
Oh yeah, yeah, that's what we were talking.
Yeah, we're talking about that.
Because the SEC, if you haven't seen, we were talking about college basketball.
Yeah, rolling,
dude, it is loaded this year. The SEC is unbelievable.
Yeah,
in
Tennessee,
basketball.
Florida, Kentucky are all in the top 10.
Arkansas's
up there.
I mean,
Alabama's up there.
Yeah, it's a legit league.
But there's this notion out there that the SEC is now just, you know, the their run of dominance is over. And look, the SEC is going to be good, right? In football, we're talking about LSU, Bama, you know, Texas. You know, these schools are going to continue to be great. Great tradition, a lot of recruiting benefits down there, you know, that all of that. But one thing to remember is back in the day, you could buy, and look, everyone bought their roster. If you don't think Oregon was buying a roster for the last 20 years, I don't know what to tell you. If you were going to be competitive in college football 20 years ago, you were buying kids. The SEC had a more advanced way of doing it. Everyone was doing it. They all had to feed at the trough. But for $4 to $5 million, you could buy an elite roster. It used to be to get a five-star kid to come visit you, it was anywhere from $5 to $10 grand, right? And it would cost you $100 grand to and maybe a car to bring in one of the big time athletes. And so for schools like Bama and LSU, they had no problem coming up with a couple million bucks.
Well, but they thought also, it was what, like $200 grand for Cam Newton, something
exactly.
like that?
Exactly.
But they also kept kids home. You got to remember, they yes. have, in those states, Louisiana, Alabama, Georgia.
Put up fences.
They have so many kids
yes.
that are just groomed there.
Yeah.
That generally stay local, so it's even easier to get them. Yes, you have to pay them, but you didn't yeah. have the Oregons or the
yep.
Ohio States of the world having this big bucket to come in and swoop them out of there.
Yeah, so now it's harder than ever because it's a national recruiting profile. Kids, it's no longer just I'm staying in my backyard. Look at Oregon's roster, for God's sake. It's all over the place.
Well, yeah, because the SEC, like if you grew up in Alabama,
yep.
why would you not want to go play at Alabama? Not only are they the best, or Georgia or whatever, they have the most money,
yeah.
and you get to stay close to home. Like, there was no reason to go anywhere else.
But here's the problem. Like, when Kirby Smart comes out and says, I want some of that Dan Lanning NIL money, we all kind of laugh because you're like, oh, my God, it's Georgia.
What an idiot.
But he's not lying. When Nick Saban came out and was critical of Texas A&M, remember that recruiting class under Jimbo Fisher? He was being serious because he was like, dude, Alabama boosters, we need to go. Places like Bama and Georgia do not have just this never-ending run of millionaires because it is no longer feasible to put together a $3 or $4 million roster. We know in college football to put together a top 15 roster, you need $20 million. You need somewhere between 15 and 20 million just to be competitive. And for places like Georgia and Bama that do not have giant rich boosters, it is becoming increasingly difficult for them to stockpile talent and pay for the kids that they want to pay. And not only is it harder for them now that you have to come up with more money, I promise you, Auburn does not have $20 million coming in donations. They just aren't. And you, Florida State is another one of these that does not have a huge donor base. Miami has a couple big ones, but Miami struggles. They don't have a big donor base. They've got a couple hammer ones, but they do not have some of the resources that Texas and Ohio State and Oregon have. Oklahoma apparently is struggling with this as well. And so as we move into this new world, not only do you need more money, but you now have more schools that are willing to do it. Schools like Notre Dame, which weren't actively feeding at the trough the way that the Alabamas were, and some other schools out west that dabbled in it, but never went full SEC. You've now opened it up to where every school can do it. And some of these schools, in fact, how about that? BYU just landed the number one prospect in the country, the number one NBA guy for next year, because they were paying $7 million for him.
Well, they got a bunch of money.
They got a bunch of money.
The Mormies.
The Mormons have money.
Well, and the other one is SMU.
SMU. SMU has stepped up to the table and is like, hey, we may not be Alabama, but we have more money than Alabama. We have a hell of a lot more money than Alabama. So you now have more schools with more resources entering the fray at a higher clip. And I do think it is going to be harder and harder for some of the traditional SEC powers that maybe have smaller donors that used to just be frenzy guys. Remember the main guy at Alabama was like, he was like a car guy, and I think he had some relation to like Bear Bryant. He was like Bear Bryant's like grandson or something. And he was a millionaire, but he wasn't Phil Knight. He wasn't the SMU millionaires.
To piggyback off of that, you know what's really wild? You got me to thinking. Phil Knight, of course, Oregon is one of these too. Like, yeah. I mean, if you say Oregon, BYU, SMU, uniquely positioned with just their donor base and the situation that they're in to really feast in this new environment.
Notre Dame, too.
Notre Dame. I don't know who else you would throw in there. But what's really wild, if you just keep it in the state of Oregon, is two of the richest men in the country. Mm-hmm. One of them is a graduate of Oregon.
Yep.
And the other is a graduate from Oregon State.
Oregon State.
The problem is the Oregon State guy is a computer dork who doesn't give a rip about sports, the NVIDIA guy, and Phil Knight is like Mr. Sports and dumped a lot of resources into his football program. Isn't that a kick in the pants if you're an Oregon State fan?
Yeah.
It's like, because what you're talking about, Oregon State doesn't have that in spades, but they do have one dude they have a Phil Knight.
They could solve that problem tomorrow if somebody wanted to.
He doesn't give a rip. Yeah. And I asked Scott Barnes, we had Scott Barnes on not too long ago, and I asked him about that.
Did you ever, if you looked into
it? Like, hey, dude, what are you doing with this guy? Like, does he care about sports? Do you talk to this? You know, he danced around it. Like, I don't, as a matter of fact,
because I think he has donated to the school, small amounts.
The engineering program and everything, but not sports. But what's he worth? The NVIDIA's, just hit an all-time high. Like,
I think he's worth more than Phil Knight.
Yeah, I think he is too.
Yeah.
I forget his name, but
Jensen Huang.
Yeah, he doesn't give a rip about sports. And Barnes, you know, punted on the question, but I really want to know how much they've tried to get into that guy's pocket. Yeah.
$126
billion. Yeah.
God, so, what's Knight at?
I think Knight's like 70 or 80.
Yeah, it's crazy.
But yeah, I'm just
it's just crazy.
It's just something to keep an eye on.
33.7.
That's it?
That's what Google machine's telling me.
Yeah, Nike's been
taking a little. But just all of these SEC schools, when you hear their coaches, and you've heard this from Lane Kiffin, you've heard it from Kirby Smart, you've heard it from Nick Saban.
Ooh, what about Stanford?
If you got, do they care?
There's a bunch of
Stanford
alumni.
Stanford is,
but you get a bunch of Jensen Huangs there. You get a bunch of NVIDIA guys.
That's true. But this is known for its sports, though, too.
When
you hear these schools in the South kind of complaining about needing money, we all laugh at it. But I'm telling you, talking to people, that is more of a thing than you realize, because they just are not donor bases that have the big heavy hitters. If you asked me again, who is poised? If this is what really ends up being the future of college football, just keep an eye on SMU. SMU will rise. They're in a
Well, they already have. They were just in the
college football playoff. The first year.
I enjoyed
And I know that they didn't quite belong, but if you don't think that that roster is going to continue to get better and better and better, realize that in this world of shuffling conferences and trying to scrape together all the money you can, SMU went to the ACC and said, we'll take no money. We will sacrifice $230 million worth of future TV money just to be in a Power Four conference. And when someone brought up, are you seriously not going to take $230 million? Their donors laughed. Their donors laughed and was like, yeah, I think we can swing the 35 mil a year.
So the first time I'd seen SMU play this year was the Clemson game, the ACC title game.
Yeah.
And it was great because on that broadcast, they showed the suite with all those dudes sitting in there with their big old cowboy hats, drinking beer. Mm-hmm. It was something.
Yeah.
I was like, that right there, that suite right there is going to put that program over the top.
Yep.
Did you see the photo from the playoff game against Penn State where the airport in State College was like so impacted, they got diverted, like the billionaire donor plane got diverted to like Harrisburg or somewhere that they had to bus in, and they missed the first quarter of the game, and people are saying there's about like $2 billion worth of donor money on this one bus that's making their way to
Suddenly
State College.
They buy the State College football stadium.
They buy the airport too while they're at it.
They buy the airport.
Well, and it's my buddy he's a big Husky guy, and and he's been involved in their athletic department. And I know a real frustration level with UW is they in Seattle, they are surrounded by money, billionaires, huge companies, and they just can't get any of them to.
Yeah, they just don't think it's important.
They just can't get them to open up. Where the other one that I've heard brought up a lot, who has a sneaky rich alumni base that does care, is Nebraska.
Really?
Yeah. Supposedly, Nebraska has a sneaky, big, broad base that maybe doesn't have the SMU billionaires, but there is a lot of successful people from Nebraska, and that they may be poised to be robust in the NIL era, and throwing some weight around.
Well, we'll push off our college football crack block. I know you guys were excited, but we got onto something else there.
Yeah, we got derailed there.
We'll do that later. Up next, it is time for In the News. The era has become, Jason. Oh, Sticky the Kitty has passed.
Sticky.
Here's Buckley.
Still on the text program asked, well, if SMU has all this money, why didn't they buy a roster when it was cheap to do so? They did. It was called the Death Penalty.
Yeah. 1982? When was that?
Yeah, it was in the 80s. It was Eric Dickerson and Craig
85?
James. Yeah, they were one of the preeminent programs in the country.
Yeah, they definitely did.
And then they got the death penalty. So it set them back a little bit.
That's probably a Gen Zer.
Do your homework. I just laugh when someone's like, how come SMU?
Or sarcasm?
What?
Oh, maybe.
Maybe they knew that.
They were probably just being sarcastic.
No, because they asked, why didn't SMU and BYU both win when you could buy a roster for $3 or $4 million? BYU wouldn't, and SMU did, and then got...
BYU has too many morals.
I know.
SMU had too few.
Exactly. And now they can meet in the middle and now just pay everybody.
It's all on the up and up.
Yes. Bottom line is, get yourself a billionaire donor and you'll be fine.
Except that you have to get one that's not a nerd.
Yes.
Like Oregon State.
You got to get a billionaire owner that loves sports.
January 7, 2025, it is time for In the News. I am your noted and humble newsman. Thank you. Please be seated.
Yeah. Let's do that.
It's brought to you by The Advocates, injury attorneys at advocateslaw.com. Today is National Pass Gas Day.
Oh, really?
So I want you to fart. Can you fart on command?
Nah, I can't. Plus, if you do, man, you got to be real careful about that. That's a bold move. I call that the gambler. And, you know, sometimes...
Like for an oopsie?
Yeah, sometimes you roll snake eyes.
An oops poop.
And then you got a problem. I've got the poo in my hands!
We also have it as a bobblehead day today.
Oh, really? Bobblehead's still a thing?
Yeah, you know what? We got... Fun fact, my wife and I got our own bobbleheads... Oh. From the kids.
Yeah, one of the 3D printed things.
For Christmas.
Yeah.
They were the cutest little thing.
That's adorable.
Yeah.
Yeah, very I cute. Don't. In fact, I threw away a bunch of bobbleheads just the other, like around the holidays. I used to have some like on like a shelf in my office, and I was like, why
do I have those?
Yeah, I just threw them away.
I think I have some in storage, some old ones, like Tiger Woods and all that.
I had a bunch, and they're just random ones. I don't even like, just over the years.
Satchel Paige.
Well, be like, I don't know if your family ever did. I mean, that's cool that they got you like the three, like your own.
Yeah.
But like back in the day, it used to be my family was like, I don't know what to get him. Get him a bobblehead. And you're like, you get a bobblehead of like, or a Funko or something, some movie you like. You're like, eh.
Well, we've talked about Sticky the Kitty here.
Oh, yeah.
Before, because the dude who found Sticky the Kitty, and that was the kitten that was glued to the road in Salem.
Yes.
Back in 2018.
It was terrible, by the way.
Well, the guy that found the kitty and rescued the kitty, his name is Chuck Hawley. He has been documented. Like, there have been a lot of features on him nationally about how he used the cat to create children's books. He created a series of children's books about Sticky the Kitty. I regret to inform all of you, and I really do regret this. Sticky the Kitty is dead. The son of a bitch went and glued it to the street again.
Natural causes, I hope?
Yeah. Yeah, he was just old.
Old Sticky the Kitty.
Yeah.
I remember that story. That thing was adorable. It was like a tiny little kitten.
Yeah.
I don't understand.
But ended up with a good life.
Yeah. I do not understand how people can hurt like innocent little animals. I just, I don't know. That doesn't compute. Doesn't compute in my old brain.
So, what's his nuts? Chuck? Did I say his name? Chuck? I just said it. Yeah, Chuck Hawley.
Yeah.
Thanks for paying attention.
Well, I could remember.
He got another cat. So, Sticky passed away. This was just last week. Brief illness. Very tragic. But,
Chuck also has an 8-pound chihuahua.
Yeah. Chuck went to the Oregon Humane Society, and apparently a kitty paw reached out from a kennel and touched him.
And that's when you knew, huh?
And he has now taken that cat. Yeah. By the way, the cat's name is Alan. He has taken that cat home.
If I thought my dog would be okay with it, you could convince me to get a... you could convince me
Sticky
to get
the kitty?
Yeah, I'd do that. But, you know, dogs and cats don't necessarily jive, so plus I think the cat would beat up my dog.
Did you just admit that you'd become cat guy if you could?
No, I said I would be open to the idea of having a cat to go along with my dog.
You made a lot of fun of Mike Lynch for being cat guy.
Oh, absolutely. And I'll make fun of anyone. If you're a man and you're a cat guy, yeah, I'm making fun of you. Now, if you have a dog and you get a cat to go along with it, that's all right. But if you're just a cat owner, yeah, I judge you.
Two sea turtles washed up along Oregon's beaches in the final days of 2024 due to hypothermic shock.
Oh.
It's cold out there.
Yeah, with the ocean changes and all that.
So we had 17 sea turtles last year wash ashore. That is the highest number in the state in any given year. It is seasonal. During warmer seasons, they'll go out hundreds of miles out, which I think is amazing, right? Like, just these little turtles, and they just...
Well, some of those turtles are
hundreds
big,
of miles. Yeah, right. Well, whatever. But it's all relative. None of them are huge. And they,
in relation to the ocean, they are small.
Yeah. And they go hundreds of miles out to just find food.
Yeah.
Like, why not? Yeah.
No.
Stay a little closer to home.
I don't know how the turtles do it, but if you've ever gotten to, like, swim with the turtles, it's an amazing thing.
But anyway, when the temperature decreases, they migrate to warmer waters, and if they don't get there in time, the colder ocean temperatures up here force their bodies into a hibernation type of state, and that's when they wash ashore, because they're literally out there just like...
Bobbing. But once they wash
up... wash up, they do not die. This is what I want to get at.
Okay.
Is what they're warning us is if you see those turtles on the washed up on the shore, leave them alone. They may not be dead.
Ah. So there's only one thing to do when you find a turtle on the shore. Am I right?
Poke it with a stick?
Leave it alone.
How are you supposed to know if it's dead or not?
I think
you just leave it.
I think you poke it.
It might be dead, it might be alive, just leave it.
When we see dead stuff on the beach, we just tell our kid it's resting.
That's right.
I stand by my... find me a situation where it's wrong. Hey, I don't know if that's alive or dead. Poke it.
You're not talking about assaulting it, just a little nudge.
Just a little nudge,
Well, who cares? Like, I don't care if I don't want to know if it's alive
or
dead.
A gentle nudge.
I assume it's alive. Let's just leave it alone. It's freezing its little turtle balls off. Let's not touch it. Or maybe give it a little blanket.
I'm not touching it. I'm poking it. It's a stick. And if it does move and I think it's alive, why can't I then warm it up? What if I've got like a...
Just leave it alone.
What if I got like a heat ray?
You're not a hero.
Oh. Hey, that's not true. I have saved many a fish that have washed up. If I see a fish moving around on the shore and it's washed up, I absolutely, of course, I take a stick and then I fling it. I go from a poke to a fling and I work it back out. Like with the puffer fish, absolutely, you fling it back out in the waves. And then the disappointing part is when you see that same one wash up like a minute later, you're like, damn it.
Stupid fish.
Yeah. I just saved your ass.
What would you put in a 100-year time capsule?
Poke and stick. 100 year to like so, yeah. I'm
so it'll open and it'll be opened in 100 years
to signify. I would say a smartphone.
Yeah,
that would probably be one for me. You know, you. I'm trying to think of like what would be indicative of our society. Yeah, the phone would probably be the first thing that comes to mind.
Well, this is a thing up in Vancouver, mm-hmm. and we'll get to that story next on The Fan. Got some hot off the presses Trump drops today from Buckley. Oh.
These people are crazy. Well, there's something wrong with them.
He's on one today.
Does rain really go drip?
He's talking about showers.
Yeah, I mashed up two.
But he called it rain.
Well, so I mashed up two different drops there. He had this one.
It's called rain. Comes down from heaven.
When he was talking about how we have as much water as we could possibly need.
He's claiming that anyone that has a water shortage is stupid.
If you have a low flow shower, it's dumb because we have enough water and we don't need to be doing that.
And like,
so you have these slow, crappy showers.
It goes drip, drip, drip.
Between rain and oceans, we can have as much water as we want, and it's just.
I see.
Yeah. The windmills are driving the whales crazy.
Who wants to? What?
Just
the windmills are driving the whales.
Oh yeah! If you listen to today's thing, there have been like 17 whales that have washed up in Massachusetts because of the windmills, and they can't bury them in the ground. But if we can finally do that, and he's going to fix that, then we'll be fine.
Buckle up, baby.
These people are crazy. There's something wrong with them.
We're going to buy Greenland and Canada,
and rename the Gulf of Mexico.
Wait, what?
Yeah, look, the Gulf of America, baby.
There's a lot going on.
The Gulf of America.
Yeah, yes. Seriously.
None of this is made up.
I did not see any of this.
Yes. America, yeah!
When are we swearing in?
January 20th.
Same day as the college national championship game.
Mm-hmm. Okay. It is in the news, January 7, 2025. 13 days to our new fearless leader. Mm-hmm. Taking care of those low-flow showerheads for us.
And Greenland, get ready to pack your bags.
Vancouver's Main Street Promise Project is creating a pedestrian-friendly commercial district between 5th and 15th Streets downtown. Mm-hmm. The last time they overhauled a street to this degree was 1908.
Does seem like it's been a bit.
This guy, Michael Walker, director of Vancouver's Downtown Association, said, well, how can we honor this moment in history? How do we build a connection present day to, 100 years forward? And he said, I've got it. Aha! Light bulb moment for Michael. Time capsule.
I'm asking a serious question here. Has a time capsule ever been cool? Like, ever?
I think the idea of it is, but
it's like, I remember we did these like in school or like Cub Scouts or jerk practice, whatever you went to, like, I don't know. It's like, hey, we're going to do a time capsule. Does anyone dig these up? And when we do dig them up, when's the last time something cool? Where I don't ever remember a story about anyone digging up a time capsule.
Well, I think cool is in the eye of the beholder.
Yeah.
And I also am a little confused about how people 100 years from now are supposed to know of the time capsule. Because isn't there like...
I don't know.
Something you pass forward to let people know that it's there? Or are you just saying that most time capsules are just buried and then somebody will come across them at some point? Because they've put this on a 100-year timeline. So they expect someone in 100 years to open this.
I don't know.
So how would they inform
Was there some
them?
Documentation that says, hey, like they sent a letter that says in 100 years, go dig this up in this location?
Yeah, I don't know.
That was the plot of Back to the Future, right? Back to the Future 2?
Yeah, I think so.
Is that letter delivered? I'm guessing that the vast majority of time capsules never get dug up.
For $1,200, Vancouver's Downtown Association purchased a stainless steel box measuring 20 inches wide and 16 inches high. It is 9 inches deep. He says it's not very big, but it's watertight, and it's built to last centuries. And so now the question is, what will Vancouverites put in it?
Again, I guess money would be one. Like, if you put in, like, a dollar, because I'm assuming in in a couple years, money won't be a thing.
What if you put a crypto coin in there?
I don't think those are real.
Well,
put a digital wallet in there.
Yeah, put a digital wallet.
And then no one will remember the password, and they won't be able to get that Bitcoin.
It'll be worth $2 billion.
By the way, according to information from the International Time Capsule Society.
Okay. I love that.
Would you care to estimate the percent of time capsules that are lost track of and will never be dug up?
Oh, 96.
Yeah.
Within 5 years.
What do you mean within 5 years?
Within 5 years, this percent of time capsules are lost and will never be.
Oh, I would venture to guess the vast majority. That's kind of the point.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
Well, no. I think the point of a time capsule is that you dig it up at some point. These will not be dug up.
I don't think so. I've always thought that the point of a time capsule is to bury it, and then however, you know, if someone comes across it, someone's building, some Earth is moving, it comes up, it's a pleasant surprise for those who found it.
According to the International Time Capsule Society, this is incorrect.
So they want every time capsule to be found at a certain time?
Time capsules always have a time set, and it's supposed to be dug up. But this percent are lost after 5 years.
Can you read on there about how they... It's probably 95%.
You're right. 95%.
But can you read on there about how they inform people of the future?
Most
they're supposed to open it?
So I'm reading through here. By the way, who knew there was an International Time Capsule Society? Most are done by community or schools or organizations, and it is supposed to be passed down through those organizations to future generations.
Yeah.
And a lot of them are indeed marked by some sort of plaque or sign in order for them to be dug up.
That makes sense.
And
so people know it's there,
but they just,
and they walk by it for 100 years, and then they're like, aha, it's finally here. Let's dig it up.
In fact, most people after 5 years are like, what, that thing was dumb, and we never remember it. So this one will not be dug up, but...
Well, anyone in Clark County can submit an item to be buried in the capsule. If you go to... they have a SurveyMonkey submission form online that you can go and put on there what you think should go in there.
What would you put in there that you believe is representative of the time?
God, I don't know.
I'm going AirPods.
Maybe a couple of betting slips.
Futures tickets for
on the Ducks.
Charlie Woods.
Hey, 100 years from now, you need to know the Ducks were only plus 250 to win the title.
12-time national champion Oregon.
I just like the idea of money. That would be money or a smartphone, maybe a MAGA hat.
Yeah, I think a smartphone, something tech related, because it'll be so antiquated so quickly, would be cool.
The other one too, I wonder if like a plastic, because I'm plastic is killing us, and I would assume in 100 years there's going to be no more plastic. We're going
to
come
up to handle with hazmat suits and stuff.
So I would like maybe some plastic bottles. Like, I don't know.
Yeah,
I'm guessing.
Here's what plastic was like.
Yeah, I'm guessing in the future we're going to come up with something and be like, oh my god, I can't believe everything we had was
a physical map
was plastic.
Maybe a low flow shower head.
Except no one uses physical maps anymore. What are you doing, a time capsule from the 1960s?
It goes drip, drip, drip.
With that little caption on it. Okay, so they've already put... So the Downtown Association has created a flyer peppered with images of potential items for submission, including a doll, a plastic dinosaur, old photographs, a defunct cell phone model, a necklace, a baseball...
Puka shell, I hope.
Coins, and inexplicably, teeth.
Teeth?
Yeah.
Are we not going to have teeth?
They've already received a commemorative plaque from the from the grand opening of the Hilton Vancouver, Washington, which will go in there. And the Port of Vancouver will contribute an aerial photograph of its current property, which is very exciting. Other individuals said they'd like to donate Kiggins Theater movie tickets or books of poetry.
Can I say this?
For the time capsule.
Time capsule seems really lame.
Well, spice it up, Big Soup. What do you got?
Classic German pornography? I don't know.
Whoa.
Just a stack of classic Euro porn. Now, that would be something to dig up in
why Euro London. Porn? Why not local porn?
I think Euro
so
porn.
So people could...
I was thinking maybe something a little cooler. You know, a little more free than...
Maybe you could contribute your Who Song and Larry's Day Drinking Award.
There you go. My perfect drinking certificate.
Why don't you throw that in there?
Nah,
you'll be famous 100 years.
That's precious to me.
Well, that's time capsule news.
Yeah.
You don't seem excited.
No.
It's your bird.
It is.
Vancouver.
I'm not going to put anything in there, nor am I going to be around in 100 years to dig it up. And if, let me ask you this. In your neighborhood,
yeah.
Okay, your neighborhood,
okay.
You've got to walk 4 blocks, mm-hmm. and you find in your neighborhood society, they're like, hey, we discovered a time capsule
mm-hmm.
from 100 years ago.
Okay.
100 years ago.
Pretty cool.
Early 19, like, oh my God.
Yeah, I'm in.
We're digging it up on Saturday.
Yeah.
You're going?
No, I want somebody else to dig it up.
No. It's being dug up, but they're going to open it up. All you got
to
do
just go to
Saturday,
see what's
1 o'clock.
In it. I just read about it. In the local flyer.
No one cares.
I care. I don't care to go all the way over.
You don't care to walk 3 blocks?
You said 4 blocks.
3 blocks.
You said 4.
I'm saying 3 now.
2.
No.
Across the street.
3 blocks. Across the street, you still wouldn't go.
Yeah, I would. Across the street.
What if you had a golf game?
Then I wouldn't. I would just have somebody tell me, hey, can you go to this?
What if it's raining a little bit?
Yeah, I'm out.
I think we know where the importance of time capsules land.
It's called
rain.
Cool.
Comes down from heaven.
It goes drip, drip.
It goes drip, drip.
The next
drip.
4 years are going to be great.
That's your In the News, January 7, 2025. It's brought to you by the Advocates, injury attorneys at advocateslaw.com. The Hot 5 at 5 is next on The Fan.
The windmills are driving the whales crazy.